Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. There's a sad footnote to the story of those great horned owls in Forest Park. The man who conducts the owl prowl will give us an update on those owls, their health, that is, and stability a little bit later in this program. But first, a look back at the regional health and health-related news during the year just ending. With me in studio are St. Louis Public Radio reporters who cover that beat and social issues, health reporter Dori Buscarin and Camille Phillips. Thank you so much for being with us. Nice to have you.
Thanks for having us.
Hope you both had a nice holiday.
You too.
Let me begin, and Dori, I'll begin with you. Give me your top story of 2015 in your beat.
Well, Camille and I were actually talking about this, and we decided that the biggest health issue was homicide and heroin. And they're not completely correlated, but we definitely see some connections. By the latest count by the police department, the city of St. Louis had 187 murders this year and very few arrests. And so what we see are some neighborhoods have seen 15 homicides each. And that has, I mean, not just the direct impact of a homicide, but that also reverberates out to an entire community and to family members, people who are caught in shootings that survive and go on with their life. And that's been really hard. The city's released a comprehensive crime plan earlier this month and also a task force called Mission Save, which is trying to coordinate the crime prevention agencies here.
And the heroin problem goes beyond homicides, obviously, because the people who are on heroin often are stealing things and breaking into things, and that creates that kind of a ripple.
Well, what we're seeing is a lot of heroin starts off as a prescription drug addiction. And Camille's had this huge series on this earlier this year, if you want to
pick up on it, Camille.
Oh, well, sure. I mean, what angle do you want me to take on it? Because I spent a lot of time studying the issue and reporting on heroin and prescription drugs. Basically, prescription drugs are often seen as a gateway drug to heroin, but also researchers have found pretty recently, actually a local researcher, Ted Cicero, has found that there's often a give and take. Like, it's not exclusively that people use heroin or exclusively use prescription drugs. They use both depending on accessibility, affordability, that kind of thing. But basically, there's been a rise in prescription drug abuse linked to the increase in availability. You know, back in the 90s, doctors started prescribing it more, became more acceptable to prescribe prescription drugs.
Any action taking place with regard to the doctors and trying to get them to prescribe less?
Well, that's part of it. There's been a crackdown on what you call script doctors and pill mills nationwide. And so as that access has decreased, people have looked around for another, you know, source of avoiding withdrawal. And heroin is that source.
And another challenge is that Missouri is still the only state without a prescription drug database. And a lot of doctors, when someone comes in, I mean, chronic pain is actually a very common ailment. Mm-hmm. And doctors in most states have the ability to look up and see whether or not a person is receiving a prescription, whether or not they had a prescription recently. In Missouri, doctors don't have that. And so a group of medical associations, like the Big Four, put out a list of recommendations for physicians in an attempt to draw back the number of prescriptions they're putting out. But that's definitely a concern for people who do have chronic pain.
Who are the abusers?
It's changed over the years, but that is part of it. As heroin has kind of drifted out of the stereotypes, you know, it doesn't affect any one economic class or race. It affects everybody, and unfortunately, it kind of gained headlines when it expanded beyond what you think of as the inner city. Mm-hmm. When more people started having heroin overdoses.
Well,
reaching the suburbs,
St. Louis County, for instance,
kind of
is particularly afflicted by this problem.
Yes.
Yeah. As is Madison County in Illinois. And, I mean, that's really a hotbed of this this kind of abuse. And I'm wondering why. Do we have any indication as to why that particular area would be so affected?
Well, I mean, the reason why people become addicted is because they have access and there's various reasons why. I've heard stories of, you know, teenagers going to a party and there's, you know, pills there and they try it and they get addicted, or they've been prescribed something because they had a surgery or something like that, and they have access, they get addicted to prescription drugs.
It doesn't take long, Dory, to become addicted. Once you've tried it, apparently you're hooked almost immediately.
It's true. Heroin is particularly addictive.
Yeah. Well, we're making progress in that area. Is your reporting indicating that perhaps this is on the wane or not, that it's gaining momentum?
We're seeing attempts in the State House. Back in 2014, first responders started carrying Narcan, which is sort of the EpiPen of a heroin overdose.
Well, let's just explain that.
It's
an anecdote that, in fact, if a first responder comes across someone who has had an overdose, they can bring them back with this particular medication.
Yeah, it basically blocks the receptors in the brain.
Yeah.
Sometimes a person has been out for a while and you definitely need to still get someone to a hospital and to medical treatment as soon as possible. But it has saved lives. And we also have a bill in the State House that's been pre-filed to allow civilians to carry Narcan. So parents, for example, friends. We sometimes hear stories of people who overdose and their friends are in the room and won't call 911 because they're worried about getting in trouble. So that was actually in the State House last year and did not pass after the filibuster. It just didn't get through. So they're going to try it again this year, and they think they'll have better luck.
How about in Illinois?
In Illinois this year, the 2015 legislature passed a Heroin Crisis Act that basically allows pharmacists to provide naloxone, Narcan, that's the heroin antidote. Yeah. And so basically you can go in and say to the pharmacist and say, I'd like a dose of that and get it if you're a parent or a family member that's concerned about someone struggling with addiction. And also it requires first responders to carry naloxone, the antidote, which is different than Missouri. Missouri now is allowed to carry it, but there's been slow response. For instance, St. Louis City says that they ambulance gets there just as quick as the police, so there's no sense in going through the insurance and the training required to put naloxone in the hands of police.
Well, what you're doing is joining the heroin story to the murder story, and particularly in the city of St. Louis. Now, with regard to the murders, Dury, I know you've reported on this, the attempts, and there are several of them, to designate murders as a health issue. Some people might not understand how that relates.
Sure. Yeah, we've actually done a lot of looking into this. Essentially, the idea is that violence operates, clusters, and spreads a lot like a contagious disease. And not necessarily – there are agencies in St. Louis that are trying more of a public health approach. The idea is that you can't police your way out of a homicide epidemic. You need to be connecting people to resources. You need employment opportunities. You need safe places for people to stay. It's definitely getting a lot of attention. I think that it's hard to create a coordinated approach that really works. Basically, the storyline is that studying this as a public health issue, it's been really blocked. There haven't been a whole lot of long-term studies over this issue after Congress basically blocked the CDC from funding gun violence-related studies over fears that it would be turned into gun control or calls for gun control. And so without a whole lot of empirical evidence to say this works, this is how it goes, people don't have as much to stand on. But anecdotally and through the other studies that we've been able to see that are mostly funded by universities, it does seem to work. There are violence interruption programs in Kansas City that seem to be working. And I think that at least in St. Louis, there's an attempt to start that. It'll, really matter. We'll see how it goes, over the
sometimes
next
few years. Things move slowly in St. Louis and in Missouri for that fact. I wonder if the For Sake of All report, which came out some months ago, will have any real influence, because they're basically tying health issues to all of the ills that we're experiencing these days.
Well, I think connected to that, you could say what will happen with the Ferguson report, the Ferguson yeah. Commission's report, mm-hmm. because they actually adopted a lot of the forsake of all recommendations right. within the health spectrum. So that all comes together. Yeah. What comes next?
I do think that within the medical community, there's almost like climate change. There is very little debate still about how much. I mean, there is very little healthcare that actually happens within the hospital. Most of health is how we live and is how we go by our daily lives and where we live and, you know, where we buy our food, where we exercise, where we go to school.
And it's a socioeconomic issue as well.
The
people who have little tend to have the problem and creates other problems. Before we get off the addiction question, which we just did kind of, we have a call here from Godson who wants to make a comment on it. Let's take his call. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call. I wanted to know if these people have starting this issue, is there any comparative study with other industrialized countries that to see if this is a problem with all industrialized countries, or is it only epidemic in this country? Why is it that people are always addicted to one thing or the other?
Okay. We've got the idea. Mm-hmm. Let's find it. Do we have any information on that?
Are we talking about gun violence or heroin?
We're talking about addiction.
As far as I know, I haven't seen that study, if it exists. Mm-hmm. I know that in the United States, an addiction to opiates has been linked to an increase in prescription of those opiates, as well as an increase of heroin in the country. Mm-hmm. Depending on who you talk to, it can be a chicken or an egg thing with that, as far as that goes. But I know in the St. Louis region, for instance, the purity of heroin has greatly increased over the last 7 years or so. Mm-hmm. So that has made heroin more lethal, that people were taking a dose that previously was relatively safe. I mean, as much as a drug can be safe, but what the dose that used to just give them a high now can kill them because it's so much more pure.
And it's cheap, and that's makes it that much more available.
And it's been particularly cheap coming from both Afghanistan and Colombia, I think, in the past like 10 years or so. I think their theory is that the market has just been flooded by an influx of heroin, and so that's why it's so inexpensive.
Yeah, and I think we're probably the leaders of the world in terms of drug abuse and probably alcohol abuse, but it certainly exists in other countries. I think that's one of the things he was getting to.
Yeah.
I know in Britain and some of the industrialized nations, right.
I wanted to circle back to you asking what solutions were being done. Law enforcement in the area is trying to collaborate more and work across discipline, areas to find drug chains, drug cartels, and cut them off at the knees. Also, there is new policies. They're trying to make new recommendations for prescribing prescription drugs less and trying other options first.
Right. A big challenge, though, is the lack of access to treatment for addiction. I mean, because something like heroin, I mean, if you've ever met an addict, it's a physical pain that people have when they're going through a withdrawal. And so you hear a lot about families who have a really hard time getting their loved one into treatment, especially if they don't have health insurance. There aren't a whole lot of beds in Missouri or the St. Louis region for that matter. And so I think that, you know, when you have a supply and demand issue, you really have to look at access to treatment as well.
Yeah. We have to take a break. Let's do that now. We're talking with Dori Buscarin and Camille Phillips of St. Louis Public Radio. We're talking about the beat that they cover, which is essentially the health and social services beat, and how it impacted them and us during the year 2015, the year just ending. We'll come back and continue the conversation in just a moment. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back. We'll be continuing our conversation with Dori Buscarin and Camille Phillips. We're talking about the year 2015 and health news in the region. We'll continue that conversation momentarily, but first, here are some of the stories our St. Louis Public Radio newsroom is following today. Floodwaters continue to rise throughout the region, causing roads to close and some towns to be evacuated. The newsroom will keep you posted on the impact of all the flooding throughout the afternoon. And the city of St. Louis has filed eminent domain proceedings against several landowners in St. Louis who own property within the footprint of the proposed location of the National Geospatial Agency on the city's north side. Also, a group of volunteers, including teachers, students, and community members, are painting the walls at Confluence Academy, South City. They are helping artist Kababi Bayak complete a mural that he created that depicts healthy children and healthy food. You can learn more about these and other stories this afternoon on St. Louis Public Radio and throughout the day at stlpublicradio.org. Now back to our conversation with Dury and Camille. Let's look at some of the other things that you've been covering. Another big issue is homelessness, and that is obviously health-related in some ways. Camille, what's your take on what's been going on?
Well, interestingly enough, this year it marks the decade since St. Louis City and St. Louis County pledged to end chronic homelessness. Mayor Slay and Charlie Dooley, then Executive Charlie Dooley, pledged that in 2015. By 2015, they did chronic homelessness. According to the latest, you know, federal numbers, that did not happen. I mean, you can ask, was that too lofty of a goal to set? And you can also, you know, basically different people I've talked to, officials, service providers, have said the recession hurt, made it more difficult to fight homelessness. Also, there's been a renewed push towards housing first. I'm not sure you're familiar with that. It's a method of combating homelessness, where basically every person, every service, whether it's a soup kitchen or a temporary shelter, reinforces the need to find permanent housing. And basically the service providers try and get someone who is experiencing homelessness into housing as quickly as possible.
Well, there's been an attempt for many years, too, to establish a center. I mean, we've all heard the story, the Larry Rice stories, and the things that he has tried to do over the years. Where are we on that? Do we have any feeling that there is a single place that might be established? Do we know?
Well, the city is still looking for a permanent location. They want to open up a 24-hour shelter, men's shelter. Right now, they have the Bridge, which is in Centenary Methodist Church downtown, mm-hmm. across from the Y. There's a little bit in limbo. They were going to move to what's known as City Hall West this month, but they're possibly setting up a contract for like a six-month extension. We'll see, while they continue to look for a permanent location for the men's shelter, because in April, they set up a temporary men's shelter in 12-foot Park, which is a rec center, a city-owned rec center.
Infant mortality, Dury, another big issue in our community and has been for a long time. Where are we on that?
Well, one interesting thing is that the Maternal Child and Family Health Coalition has created an initiative called Flourish St. Louis. And over the past year, they've been doing a lot of public input sessions with mothers. Infant mortality is a big deal in St. Louis, and we haven't been able to push the needle. There are a lot of nonprofits trying to help with prenatal care, trying to help with that first year of life for these kids. And this is kind of the attempt that they're making to put a lot of money toward this, have a coordinated effort to really improve outcomes. I mean, a lot of infant mortality is tied to socioeconomic issues. You know, if you don't have access to health care while you're pregnant, that can be really challenging.
Yeah. Any thoughts on that, Camille?
It's not something I've covered, except for with the For Sake of All, when we
talked about that report. Yeah. What else? What are some of the other major health-related issues that we should be talking about?
Well, Planned Parenthood was a big thing, and I know you had Joe Manis on a little bit earlier, so we don't have to go into it, but essentially there was a national pro-life group who created a bunch of sting videos over some clinics that allow women to donate fetal tissue after an abortion to science, and the videos were claiming that Planned Parenthood was selling the tissue and making a profit, which would make it illegal. Here, state in Missouri, there was an investigation to the St. Louis Planned Parenthood. They were cleared of wrongdoing. They actually don't allow women to donate tissue there. And then there's been a big story at the Planned Parenthood in Columbia. Under pressure from the state house, the University of Missouri withdrew referral privileges to one physician who had been able to perform medical abortions. That's up to 9 weeks. It's two pills you take, and it induces an abortion. It's not a surgery. And so that doctor losing referral privileges meant that the clinic was at risk of losing its license to provide abortions, but due to a ongoing lawsuit. A federal court blocked the Missouri Health Department from revoking their license.
We'll be hearing more through the state legislature this year. It's definitely going to be an issue that they'll be talking about in Jefferson City. Let's talk for a moment as time begins to wind down about East St. Louis and the troubles over there, financial troubles primarily. Camille, I know that's an area you've looked into.
Yes, yes. Well, as far as financial issues go, the city is projecting a $5.7 million deficit for the 2016 year. And there's been a lot of finger-pointing going on about how they got in that boat and how it wasn't caught sooner. Most recent development is that city manager Alvin Parks was fired on Monday, which is a back-and-forth of power that's been going on since April, basically.
It sounds like we're trying to make it sound like he was let go as part of the financial deal, but the politics over there is
It's hard to say. I mean, I think, you know, people wouldn't necessarily point that direct finger. It's politics. But they basically, in April, Amika Jackson-Hicks was chosen as mayor for East St. Louis. Alvin Parks was previously mayor for 8 years. Her point is what she said is that Parks had his say. It's she wants to try a new thing, and so she was kind of upset when the city council, over her objections, selected Alvin Parks as city manager in August. Now, East St. Louis is a weak mayor city, so that means the city manager has more power than the mayor does. And so from August through December, Alvin Parks was the city manager, and then on Monday, Amika Jackson-Hicks and two city council members voted to oust him.
Yeah, some political muscle flexing, no question. Poor East St. Louis, but the whole state of Illinois has had its problems with regard to finances.
And definitely.
They also had that teacher strike early in the school year, and that was a problem as well. A little bit time left, but Yuri, I wanted to get to you because of your involvement in the coverage of Ferguson when Michael Brown was shot and the aftermath of that situation. This first-year anniversary, give me some feedback from you on your thoughts after 1 year of covering Ferguson.
Oh, gosh, 1 year. The anniversary, that we thought it was going to be a calm night. There was a concert planned, and there was a protest in Ferguson along West Florissant. And in the middle of the night, these two groups of people started shooting at each other just, you know, less than a block away from about 50 protesters. I mean, there were kids in the crowd. Mm-hmm. There were seniors. And that, I think, was a huge shock. Actually, during that altercation, a young man was shot and wounded by police. So that, I think, was really rough for people to see on the anniversary of something. I think a year and a half later, we've seen a major discussion in our region that's affected the whole country. Overall, it's been really fascinating to see it play out, and I've learned so much about this region just since coming here. It's amazing.
Well, you came here and stepped right into it.
Yeah.
In terms of, you weren't here very long before the Michael Brown shooting.
Just a week.
Just a week.
Yeah.
What a way to earn your spurs in a new market. That's tough. There was a moment during that first week or so that I think a lot of people remember, that being the fact that you were kind of caught up in, I wouldn't call it a crossfire, but in a potentially very dangerous situation, and you were seeking refuge, and you found it. Just relate that story and how you followed up on that.
Sure. That was a really rough night. I remember because it was my father's birthday, actually. And it was a night when police had cracked down on a protest pretty early in the evening, tear gas, rubber bullets, and my coworker and I were stranded from our cars. So we kind of went into a neighborhood and saw a porch with the light on, knocked on the door, and the Moore family was huddled up in their living room, five kids and their mom, Irma, and just watching the news of what was happening a block away, and they let us come in. We aired a story about the family and about their experience living through Ferguson. And then a year later, we went back, spent some time with them, and found out that they have a new baby now, Elizabeth. She's adorable.
Life goes on.
I know.
As they say.
And I just can't imagine, you know, being there with your five kids and pregnant and opening the door in a night like that. They are just probably – they're the strongest family I've met this year.
And all of this happening 21st century United States of America. It seems almost like a third world situation, doesn't it? Final thoughts. Camille, what are you looking forward to in 2016? Anything that is on the calendar in terms of what you think might be happening?
Oh, that's a tough one. I mean, as you know, I'm general assignment, so I cover a different story every day. I've kind of, you know, carved out. I'm continuing to cover East St. Louis, whatever happens next there, and homelessness, whatever happens next there. We'll have to see what, you know, New Life's next step, because they were their lawsuit was thrown out, but now the city has denied their permit to expand how many people they can take each night. So next step there, we'll see.
They'll be in the news again in 2016, just as they have been for the last good many years. Duri, how about you? Your crystal ball out?
I think there's going to be an increased focus on everything about healthcare that is not happening in a clinic or a hospital. I think that we're seeing a lot of people focused on expanding access and focused on keeping people healthy instead of treating them when they're sick.
We shall see. I want to thank you both, Duri Buscarin and Camille Phillips, for being with us and kind of reviewing the year on your beats.
Thank you.
We're going to be taking a sharp departure from this subject matter in just a moment, because we're going to be talking about those owls in Forest Park. That's coming up. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.